time is definitely one of the most interesting inventions devised by mankind. The concept of time. All right. So I've already gotten emails from two students, and traffic out there in the world is a bitch. But we're not going to wait for them. We'll get things going so we don't stay late. Because I know some of you have classes after this one is done. All right. So we're talking about the structure of the Constitution. And by the way, there are certain components that I will hold you accountable for on the exam, which when we get to the end of class, I'll let you pick what day it's going to be on. So make sure if you miss things that I say, make sure you ask questions and or use the Google machine. Look the stuff on the internet, or use your book, because it's in there. So, in the flow of discussion, I realized I talked about the Supremacy Clause, talked about the fact that under the Constitution, the Constitution and the laws made there under, and the treaties of the supreme law of the land, that's found in Article 6, Clause 2. And then I started talking about restrictions on state power, but I forgot to mention the actual congressional powers. So I threw this in. So even though it looks like I'm going back, I'm really not, because I'm not going to reiterate the restrictions on state power that I covered at the end of class. By the way, all of these things can be read. The powers granted to the United States government can be found in Article 1, Section 8. Article 1, Section 8. Of the U.S. Constitution. There are 18 clauses in that section that lay out all of the actual powers of the United States government. Many of them you are familiar with. So, I don't think you can see this, but like I said, I'm pretty sure I got this graph from your book. But what are the big powers of the United States government? What can the United States government do, constitutionally speaking?
Make legislation.
They can pass laws that deal with what subject matter? That's what I'm talking about. There's only 18 areas that the Congress is allowed to make legislation with, or for. What are they? Because, by the way, everything has to be done through legislation. All acts. They can coin money. Only the United States government has the ability to establish a currency for these United States of America. Only the United States government can regulate interstate commerce. So the United States government has the capacity to make the laws that regulate all trade going in and out of states. Yes.
Work at a bank, and if we have like counterfeit, we have to call someone, like we have to send it off to the Secret Service.
You do, because believe it or not, that's what the Secret Service was created for. I think, I don't remember if it was during Abe Lincoln's presidency or Ulysses S. Grant's presidency, but whenever the Secret Service was founded, that's what it was created for, to go around the country and find counterfeit. It wasn't until the 20th century when the Secret Service also started serving as bodyguards for the president. No weird things. All right, here's another area that Congress has the ability to make laws dealing with. International trade. Congress has the ability to regulate foreign commerce. Congress has the authority to make laws dealing with naturalization. So, you want to become an American citizen? That's national legislation, not the states. Copyright laws, patents, that's handled by the national government. So, you come up with an invention. and you want to make sure no one can basically steal your idea, you contact the United States government. Bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is not a state issue. Bankruptcy is a federal issue. Enforce contracts. If you make a contract, any type of contract, it is enforceable by the federal government. What else can I think of? Declare war. As much as Massachusetts may want to go to war with Canada, it can. Well, it can, but it doesn't have a right to declare war. Only Congress has the authority to declare war. Here's an interesting notion. Only the national government can call forth or raise armies. The state can have a militia, but that militia is only bound legally to protect the state. But if we do go to war, only the government can call for a nationalized army.
Is that really a thing anymore? Do we really have militias? Would you liken that to the National Guard?
The National Guards were created in the late 19th century, post-Reconstruction, because there was a lot of very serious strikes going on, particularly in the railroad industry. There was a couple of strikes that basically shut down the whole country. And like we ended in a recession because of it. Well, what would happen is the state governors would call out the militias to go and suppress the strikes, because it was illegal to strike in our country prior to the 1930s. So when the militias went out, instead of suppressing the strikers, they joined them. So the way that the states got around using militias is through National Guards. In Massachusetts, militias are still legal, but they can be raised by the towns if their charters provide.
I was just wondering, because I saw that there was a piece of legislation trying to go through the Virginia House of Delegates, which would make it so that the Virginia National Guard could not be sent into a conflict unless the federal government had declared war, which I think was in the Constitution anyways.
Yeah.
But they were trying to shore that up, and it didn't pass.
Yep.
What about ratification of the amendment?
What about ratification? We'll do the amendment process. But it's not the Congress that ratifies. All right, declare war, support. Oh, here's another thing that I love. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. The necessary and proper clause. Do you want to know why the federal government has ballooned into this all-encompassing black hole of power, corruption, and abuse? Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. It allows basically the federal government to pass laws that in any way, even just a little bit, deal with one of the express powers. But they can basically craft it and tailor it to do anything they want. So when we talk about federalism, I'm going to give you a couple examples of where the meanings were basically stretched beyond the original intent, which basically would set the precedent that for 200 years afterwards, basically it allowed the federal government to grow in an unstoppable manner. Let me think. Is there anything else I want to mention? No, I think those are the big ones. So again, take a look at Article 1, Section 8. You can do a little Google thing, go through it. Make sure you could mention, if I asked on the exam, I don't know, 5, 6, or 7 of them or so. What are the things that Congress has the power to do, or the federal government has the power to do? All right, so some of the things that the federal government can do, I touched upon when I talked about the powers that are denied to the states. So the federal government makes the currency, not the states. The federal government puts taxes on imports, not the states. The states cannot enter treaties. The federal government does that, and so forth.
But we did those. Questions? All right. We already talked about that as well. Well, there are things that the federal government can do. There are things that the state can do. Well, ironically, there are things that both can do at the same time. That's what concurrent means. A concurrent power, it's not a shared power. It's just two separate entities doing the same thing. Not always in concert, but they have the ability to do so. So, the federal government and the states can pass laws to create taxes. The federal government and the states can spend that tax money. The federal government and the states can borrow money. Because, by the way, the government can't do anything if it doesn't have money. And whose money is it? It's ours, exactly. Both the federal government and the states can pass legislation. And they can enforce those laws within their jurisdictions. Side note, something to think about. What happens when federal law and state law conflicts? What?
They vote.
They vote? Who votes?
People can't vote on legislative matters. We don't have a democracy.
Well,
delegates? Conflict. Example. Focus a little bit. Under federal law, marijuana is a banned illegal substance. Massachusetts, however, has passed laws that legalize the sale for medicinal and recreational purposes. How does that work? If the federal government's laws are the supreme law of the land. You know how it works? Pot dispensaries are not allowed to have bank accounts with interstate banks, national banks. Because if they were to accept money, that would be an illegal transaction under federal law. Here's a true story, and I love telling the story, because it makes sometimes students, particularly those who might be engaged in shenanigans, pause. I have a buddy who's a state trooper, right? He understands the danger of marijuana, and he understands the lasting harm that could occur if you partake in marijuana. Literally shrinks your brain. Well, he pulled over some guy on the Mass Pike who was not only high as a kite, but gave him attitude about the fact, well, it's legal, I can do it. So my buddy was like, okay, that's fine. License, the registration, I'm just going to go back in the car. Goes back in his cruiser, whips out his cell phone, and he calls one of his buddies who's in the FBI. Who quickly gets in his car, gets on the Mass Pike, flies out, and arrests the guy for transporting a controlled substance in the borders of the United States. Here's the amazing thing. Federal law is supreme. So even though it's legal in Massachusetts, it's up to Massachusetts if they want to enforce. Because the cops can no longer, the feds can. So the guy ended up getting brought to federal court. He was sentenced to... he had to pay a fine because he didn't have a large quantity. I mean, he had to pay a fine, and I think he got like
6 months incarceration, something like that.
So just be warned, if there is a law in the books, and it's a federal law, the state will not win.
All right, moving on. Both the federal government and the states can make courts. They're allowed under their constitutions to make their own court systems. So when we talk about the judicial branch,
we are one of the few countries that actually have two separate, complete court systems.
The state and federal government can charter banks.
The state and the federal government can charter corporations.
The state and the federal government can take property for public use.
So long as it's done with due process. So if you have a large parcel of land and your town is looking to build a school or the state is looking to build a road, the state or the municipality can send you notice of their interest. You do not have to surrender your land, though. You can say no. But if you agree to it, the government has to give you fair market value of the property. So they can't basically devalue your home and say, it's only worth 3 cents. No, whatever the market value is, that's asked, if you agree to it.
And if you don't, you end up with the S-curve. Over near where the Rotman's building is. That's why if you're ever driving down the highway and the highway does something funky, because that's when the state was looking to build a highway, the property owners said, no, we're not going to sell. So the government has to build around it.
I find it super interesting because right now I'm taking like a beginning of like U.S. to like 1850.
Oh, U.S. history, yeah.
Yeah. And my teacher just really happens to be into like the history of Worcester.
Yeah.
And, like, one of the things we're doing right now is like we're learning about like the S-curve and stuff. But like you guys are very like in tandem with like how you're going about like.
Well, let's give you examples when I talk about things that you understand, that
exactly.
You can see. Yeah.
No, it's helpful. Very helpful.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And props to your other professor.
Yeah, no, she's great.
All right. So those are the major concurrent powers.
Powers that both can do. Both can do. But remember, like I said, if the federal government has a law, federal law supersedes state law.
Now, can the Congress do anything it wants? Heck no.
Article 1, Section 8 gives the powers of the federal government, but Article 1, Section 9 are the limitations on the federal government.
Things that the federal government cannot do. The federal government cannot tax property. Only the states, through the towns, can establish property taxes.
Ooh, here's a huge one. The federal government cannot suspend habeas corpus.
Habeas corpus. H-A-B-E-A-S. Habeas. Corpus. C-O-R-P-U-S.
Unless, of course, there is a rebellion or invasion. What's habeas corpus?
The right to a trial, legal representation of some kind.
Kind of. It's the right to enter due process. There's an odd question. But why not? Have any of you ever been arrested before? Does anyone know? Anyone who's ever been arrested before? Okay, what happens shortly after the police put the cuffs on them, take them to the jail cell? What happens once they get beyond that being in jail? Not prison, but jail. Where do they have to go?
In holding.
They're in holding, but they don't stay in holding. They have to go to court. Why do they go to court?
To get a hearing date and all that stuff.
What is that process called?
Due process.
No. So you're arrested, you're in holding, you go to court to get all of the information about what's going to come. What's that called? Criminal justice major.
I learned about this last semester.
I know, but I don't know what it's called.
It's called arraignment.
There we go.
Now here's the catch. Habeas corpus is the right to appear before a judge before trial. But at the point when the government's holding you, what does the government need to hold you? They need some type of evidence of what?
That a crime has been committed.
The crime has been committed. What level of evidence?
Reasonable suspicion.
So they have to have seen that you've done something. They have to have a good eyewitness that saw you do something. But it doesn't have to be to the level of proving a crime. They just have to have enough that says you might have done a crime. If the police don't have reasonable suspicion to establish probable cause, what will the judge do during arraignment?
Dismiss it.
That's habeas corpus. Habeas corpus is the right, after you are incarcerated, to appear before a judge. And it forces the government to prove they at least have suspicion that you did something wrong. Any of you know old English history? Any of you hear of the prison institution called the Tower of London? You know what the kings of yore used to do if they didn't like you?
They would put you in this tower.
Yeah, they'd put you in the tower. And how long would you stay?
Pretty much indefinitely.
Yeah, as long as the king wanted you there, usually till death. What happens if you did not do what the king thought you did?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, tough titties. So, the concept of habeas corpus developed in English jurisprudence around the time of the English Civil War, and it was solidified during the Glorious Revolution, which we talked about, when England kicked King James II off the throne.
He was imprisoning his political prisoners in the Tower of London, his political adversaries in the Tower of London.
I don't think James ever did, but what James was basically doing was taxing and spending, violation of Magna Carta, and basically disregarding the will of Parliament.
Right. I just meant, so who was the king that really was...
Henry VIII was one of the most tyrannical of all the monarchs.
He was one that was imprisoning his political...
But the Tower of London was built by William the Conqueror. So kings had been using that facility going back to 1066, or 1070, whenever it was built.
Well, the Founding Fathers knew their history, because again, they were English, and the one thing they did not want to allow is the federal government to basically make you disappear. All right, here's another good one. The federal government is prohibited from using bills of attainder. A-T-T-A-I-N-D-E-R. A-T-T-A-I-N-D-E-R. Does anyone know what a bill of attainder is?
I have no idea.
This is one of the most nastiest of all elements of English jurisprudence. the parliament, and I think they still can. I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But at least not too long ago, the parliament, which was the legislative branch for all sakes and purposes, could pass a law that attained you. Attainder is basically a legal definition or a legal declaration that basically says you are the Antichrist. That you are so vile, your existence corrupts all those around you. And because God sanctions the government, once you are attained, you are stripped of all of your legal existence. You lose your titles, you lose your properties, you lose your bank accounts. You have no rights. And by the way, that applies to your family until the parliament suspends the attainder.
Nasty. Wicked nasty.
Is this something that was utilized often?
Oh, yeah. Again, one of the big players that used that was Henry VIII.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows, oh, he had six wives and he killed three of them. Well, he also basically brutally destroyed the English nobility as well. And he did it all legally.
Well, our founding fathers kind of said, yeah, we're not going to have any of that. So while habeas corpus can be suspended during times of rebellion or invasion, bills of attainder can never be suspended. They can never be used under any circumstance. Here's another good one. Ex post facto. Congress is forbidden from passing ex post facto laws. Anyone know what an ex post facto law is?
Can I take a guess?
Sure, absolutely.
Like a law that would incriminate you after you have been proven not guilty?
Kind of.
Okay.
Kind of. Yeah, it's a law that is retroactive. You're 50% there. An ex post facto law is a law that's passed that retroactively criminalizes behavior. So let's say today you go to Dunkin' Donuts and get one of those orange mango drinks. Perfectly legal today. Perfectly legal today. But tomorrow, Congress passes a law that says anyone who has ever purchased one of those orange mango drinks from Dunkin' Donuts shall be subject to a $10,000 fine. That would be an example of an ex post facto law. Now, they can pass a law tomorrow that says tomorrow going forward, they can criminalize it, but they can't come after you in the past for doing something that was legal at the time. Ex post facto, after the fact. After the fact.
All right, for those of you who popped in, we've covered the powers of Congress, which can be found in Article 1, Section 8. We talked about the concurrent powers, things that the states can do and the federal government can do, kind of at the same time. And now we're talking about powers that are denied to Congress, which can be found in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. What's another good one? Oh. We talked about it previously. The federal government can put tariffs in place, taxing imports. But the federal government cannot put duties on exports. So they can tax imports, but they can't tax exports.
Oh.
for my buddy Zach, who's doing Doge.
Yes.
The federal government is not allowed to spend money from the Treasury unless there is a full accounting of it. So if the federal government's going to spend a penny, everything has to be documented clearly. Who's getting the money? Why are they getting the money? And it has to be reported. So meaning the public has the ability to look at it.
Those water money.
Oh, if you're paying attention to what Doge has found,
nuts.
They're finding trillions of dollars that have been spent. They cannot tell who it went to or why it was spent.
Right. I watched that video with Donald Trump, and that's crazy. I had no idea that that kind of stuff was going on.
And trillions more that was allegedly spent on just complete and utter nonsense.
Right.
Makes zero sense whatsoever.
Yeah, well, again, even if it's sheer and utter nonsense, that's subjective. That depends on the eye of the beholder. But if it was documented, where it's going,
right.
Why is it being spent, that is not the same as all of the other money that Doge is finding. That's just going out, and we don't know who's it going to or why it's being spent. That would be an actual constitutional violation.
They're starting a thing where if you're taking like government assisting, you have to do community service.
They have the ability to put conditions in.
We're going bankrupt, my friends. Again, $37 trillion in debt. Think about that. I don't know the exact number off the cost of every single household or citizen living being in the United States, but that's hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt you owe that you have to pay. And there's no way you're going to be able to pay it on the taxes you pay over your lifetime, which means it's going to be paid by your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids. That's only if the government doesn't put us more in debt. And by the way, on the debt thing, one last thing, tangential, read the words of the Founding Fathers in terms of the dangers of debt. They warned us, do not allow the government to go into debt. Because if you go into debt, that means someone can control you.
Question.
Yeah.
So we got Musk and Trump with the Doge thing, right? And I understand what they're speaking about, finding how they found the gap, where all the money's going, why, where it went, and how we didn't know about it or whatever. But then I'm reading on the other side of, like, somebody's trying to block what they're doing. Is that accurate? Or
yeah,
accurate?
Yeah.
Now, who is the somebody?
Probably. Well, there are people in the government that benefit from this corruption.
Right.
And they don't want to see the gravy train end.
So it's like unnamed elite members of the government that are against the Doge, pretty much?
Yeah, well, there are some names that are coming out, but yeah.
And the recipients of it, right?
Yeah, and the people who are getting it, yeah.
Whoever that may be.
And again, just something to just think about. Would you be okay if someone had access to whatever money you have in your checking account or your savings account, and they just decided to spend it on anything they wanted? And then they took your credit card and they kept using it, spending on anything they wanted, and required you to foot the bill. You know, it's just not right. So hopefully, we'll be able to rein in that craziness. All right, two other things to share. One, this is just kind of like a fun thing to contemplate. Don't mind me, I'm not hiding from you, I'm just tying my shoe. Our Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, prohibits the United States government to grant titles of nobility.
Dukes and duchesses.
Yeah, we're not, by law, prohibited by the Constitution, the government's not allowed to grant titles of being a duke or a duchess or a lord or an earl or even a sir. We do not have a knighthood in the United States of America. Now, that's not saying a United States citizen couldn't be knighted by another country, but we can. Yes?
I'm a lord in Scotland.
Did you buy the tree? Nice!
But you know something? You can't put Lord on your driver's license. As much as you may
I
want.
I thought you could.
No.
Or like your something you could put it on. Passport, maybe.
Yeah, maybe passport, but you can't. The federal government cannot get into the whole nobility thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they don't have to because their king or queen is just a figurehead. All right. Let me see. Gage. That's Gage. I know Rich. All right. Good. No, good. All right. One other thing I'm going to throw out there, but we'll talk about it later, is originally the federal government was barred from imposing direct taxes.
So under the original Constitution, as envisioned by the Founding Fathers, the federal government would not have the right to steal your wages through an income tax. But that was amended with the 16th Amendment, when in 1913, Congress decided it needed more money, so it passed the income tax by amending the Constitution. And by the way, we will talk about this one for exam number two. They did this because the Supreme Court actually ruled that income taxes were unconstitutional. So there's two ways to overturn a Supreme Court decision. It can either overturn itself, or you could amend the Constitution.
All right. Now, we know there are things that the federal government can do. We know there are things the federal government cannot do. We know there are things that both the states and the federal government can do concurrently. And we know there are things that the states cannot do. But there are also a series of powers that are reserved to the states. Now, if you will recall, I did say that after we successfully won our war for independence, at the time of our founding, each of the states were basically an independent sovereign country that chose to unite for common cause. They were bound at first under the Articles, and then they bound themselves again under the Constitution. But the Constitution recognizes residual sovereignty. There are things that go back to the fact that the states were once countries that they have sole control over, and the federal government cannot interfere. Such as, and this could be found in Article 4, Section 3. The federal government cannot carve up a state. The federal government can allow the admission of a state, but it cannot say California is too big, so chop it in half.
Or actually, I think there was the initiative plan that was going forward to make it into four.
Their state Supreme Court said that that would be unconstitutional. Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1. No state can be denied equal representation in the Senate.
How many senators does every single state get thanks to the Connecticut Compromise?
Two.
Two. Congress can't suddenly say, well, Massachusetts should get one, because our senators are fools. And they can't say, New York is so wonderful, let's give them eight. Big and small, every state gets two.
Alcohol. Under the 21st Amendment, only the states have the power to regulate intoxicating beverages.
Well, then why is the ATF thing? It's federal, isn't it?
That's to make sure that all alcohol that is manufactured basically pays the excise taxes.
But
if the state wants to ban certain alcoholic beverages, the state has the ability to do so. So, I don't know when they changed it, but not too long ago, you could not buy Everclear in Massachusetts. But I saw it in a package store not too long ago, and I'm like, when did they change that? The states also grant to municipalities the right to ban the sale of alcohol. So, Dunstable? Duxbury? I don't know, it's one of the small D towns on the New Hampshire border. They are actually a dry town. They've decided there is no package stores, there's no liquor stores, there's no nips, there's no beers.
I'm pretty sure Harvard's a dry town too, isn't it?
Could be.
Might be. One right across the border in Connecticut too, I forget what it's called.
Yeah, so the states have granted to the towns the right to basically make that decision. But the federal government cannot come in and say, buy beer. They don't have that authority. That's left to the states. And there are other areas as well. It's up to the states to deliver health care. It's up to the states to do policing. It's up to the states to do education. Those are state powers. Why? Well, this comes into the ultimate restriction on federal power, the 10th Amendment. We're going to talk about the amendments as soon as I'm done with this. We got to do the powers denied to both, amending the Constitution, and then we're going to talk about the Bill of Rights. But just make note of the 10th Amendment. We're going to come back. Oh, and I've already said, those things, the residual sovereignty, they have been protected by the Supreme Court. All right. Last but not least, before we deal with the amendment process, because Elizabeth is so excited about it, powers denied to both. Neither the federal government nor the states can prohibit the Bill of Rights. Neither the federal government nor the states can prohibit the Bill of Rights. Neither the federal government nor the states can ban ex post, deny habeas corpus, cannot use ex post facto laws, cannot use bills of attainder. So we talked about that in things that Congress was denied. Well, the same applies to the states on those three. No denial of habeas corpus, no use of ex post facto, no bills of attainder.
So you said that the one exception to that, as far as habeas corpus goes, would be like if there was a mainland invasion of the United States.
Right. So I'll give you a real example. During the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln declared there was no habeas corpus when the state of Maryland, which was a slave state, was going to secede from the Union. So he would deny habeas corpus. He sent out the army, and they went and arrested all of the state elected officials that were contemplating secession. Because if Maryland would have seceded, that would have meant D.C. would have been in between Maryland and Virginia, which would have been part of the Confederacy. After the war, the Supreme Court declared that Lincoln's denial of habeas corpus was unconstitutional, because only the Congress has the power to suspend, not the executive branch.
I've heard the argument made that he was being a tyrannical Caesar.
He was being a tyrannical Caesar. Yeah. He was. But, and I'm not excusing it.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah, he had a lot on his plate. Yeah. And could you imagine if little Washington, D.C. was actually surrounded by hostile states?
Right.
Yeah, he probably would have been, well, not dead, but they would have probably captured him and held him ransom or whatever. Yeah. And that would have ended the war. So sometimes, not to be Machiavellian, but the end justifies the means.
If he was being a tyrannical Caesar while the country was ripped in two, it would have created a power vacuum and he could have emerged a king if that's what he wanted to do.
Right. Well, we don't know what he would have wanted to do because
That experiment ended really abruptly. Sorry, too soon. All right. So, oh man, I hate it when it goes to sleep in the middle of class. Come on. Power was denied. Oh, states can't give nobility either. Ah, from the amendments. States, nor the federal government, can enact slavery. Slavery is banned under the 13th Amendment. That ban applies not only to the federal government, but also to the states. 15th Amendment. No state nor the federal government can deny you the right to vote based upon your race, color, ethnicity, or previous conditions of servitude. Although I don't know any people who were freedmen who are still alive. But it still applies. And lastly, the 19th Amendment. As much as Massachusetts may want to, they cannot deny dudes the right to vote. The 19th Amendment, granted it gave rights to women to vote, but the language says that neither the state nor the federal government has the right to deny the right to vote either to men or women. Questions? And again, I'm going to warn you. If it's one of the examples I mentioned, make sure you get it. But I've told you where in the Constitution to look, so I don't expect you to memorize everything, but at least familiarize yourself with it. And that probably will be the hardest part of the test.
The examples you gave as far as amendments that you just listed?
Yeah, the specific examples that I mentioned.
So when I make the test, I'll make sure I draw with what I read.
I won't do a deeper dive. So does that mean you might see a question involving the title of nobility? Possible. I've only mentioned it 3 times. All right. Amending the Constitution. So what happens if the federal government is trying to do something and it's not working? Does that mean the whole system needs to be scrapped and to start over again, like under the Articles? And the answer is no. Because the Founding Fathers would have been stupid if they would have retained Article 13 of the Articles of Confederation, which said the only way to amend it is with unanimous decision. They realized there might be a need to change, to progress. So they did put a mechanism in the Constitution, Article 5, that does allow for the potential of amendment. But it's difficult. It's not impossible, but it's difficult. Because again, the Founding Fathers were terrified of mob rule. And let's be honest. We, as human beings, have a tendency to react to any situation emotionally. We freak out. And sometimes when we freak out, we start doing things without thinking it through. So the Founding Fathers wanted to make a system that would allow for amendment, but again, it would take time. That takes a long process to give us an opportunity to say, do we really, really, really want to change it?
Here is how the process works. There are 2 phases.
An amendment to the Constitution has to be proposed. And once it's proposed, it then has to be ratified before it can be a part of the Constitution.
There are 2 mechanisms, 2 processes, for both steps.
What was the second one you said?
Oh, ratify. Okay.
Propose, ratify. The two methods of proposing amendments. One, Congress. Congress drafts a proposal. It's presented to both chambers, the House and the Senate. And then they vote on it. In order for it to be proposed, it takes a two-thirds vote in both the House and the Senate. Two-thirds vote. Now, by the way, I may trick you on the exam. I may ask you a silly question like, what role does the President have in amending the Constitution? Or what role does the Supreme Court have in amending the Constitution? The correct answer is nothing. Only the Congress has the power to propose. The President and the Supreme Court, the federal courts, they're not involved. Whatsoever. Under any circumstance. Now, the other way to propose it is if two-thirds of the states send requests to Congress for a national convention. Similar to, by the way, to what took place in Philadelphia. That was done by the desire of the states. So let's say the states are sitting back and thinking the federal government is out of control. The states do have a right, if there's two-thirds of them that sign on board, to require Congress, even if they don't want to call for a national convention. That national convention can then draft a proposal. Now, by the way, there has been an effort going on for at least the last 20 years to gather enough support from the states to have an Article 5 convention. Because there are many people angry at what our federal government has been doing. One of the biggest calls goes back to an initiative that was actually done under the presidency of Bill Clinton. When Democrat President Bill Clinton and Republican Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, worked together in a bipartisan fashion to balance the budget. They did it 2 years, and then after that everything went crazy, particularly after 9/11 occurred. And our debt went from $2 trillion under Bush to 30-something, $36 trillion now. Going back to around 2000, 2002-ish, several of the states basically started saying, we need to impose a balanced budget amendment, which basically prohibit Congress from deficit spending. We're not at the two-thirds level yet. But there are some bills that are put before state legislatures. And there is one bouncing around on Beacon Hill. So it's going to be interesting. It may actually happen in our lifetime. Now, by the way, this is the process that every single amendment that has been passed has been passed. This has never occurred, but it could, and it might. Now, if Congress proposes by a two-thirds vote, or if a national convention is convened and they propose by a two-thirds vote, it then goes one of two ways for ratification. It either can go to the state legislatures, and it would require a three-fourths vote. So the state legislative bodies would make the decision. Or they could call for ratifying conventions at the state level. And it would still require a 3/4 approval. Now, if you can see the colors, 26 of the 27 have been proposed by Congress and ratified by the state legislatures. But only once has Congress called for ratifying conventions. And that was with the 21st Amendment. What did the 21st Amendment do? Any of you over the age of 21?
Mm-hmm. It was a drinking thing?
It is a drinking thing. What can you do because you're over 21?
Drink.
You can drink because prohibition was repealed. 21st Amendment repealed prohibition. All right, questions? We're talking about root beer, kids, in the back.
Right.
Root beer. Or birch beer. Or ginger ale. Or ginger beer. Questions? Man, that would make a lovely essay. Wouldn't that be a good essay question?
No.
Explain to me how it works. That would be lovely. Hint, hint. All right. Bill of Rights. Now, as we know, because we talked about it, beginning with the Massachusetts Compromise, Massachusetts started a trend of all of the states considering ratification of the Constitution by suggesting that amendments be made, because the Anti-Federalists were opposed to the United States Constitution because it lacked the one thing that all of the states had, a Bill of Rights. So, part of the compromise that the Federalists made to get the Constitution in effect was they agreed that one of the first orders of business of the new Congress would be to propose amendments. And they did. And these amendments should be things that you have memorized. Because the items that are in the Bill of Rights are those God-given fundamental liberties which John Locke talked about and Thomas Jefferson talked about. These things safeguard us from a tyrannical government like England had at times under certain monarchs. And the idea was to basically keep it simple, protect your lives, your liberty, and your property. That is the aim of the Bill of Rights. Now, ironically, one of the leading Federalists, James Madison, who was our first Speaker of the House, was the one who marshaled these proposals through the House and then sent them off to the Senate. He made his proposals, his pitch, for 12 amendments on June 8th, 1789. Now, the amazing thing about that was that the United States government started in April 1789. So they promised, and they kept their promises. Now, once they were proposed, they had committee hearings, they had debates, they tweaked the language. But once it got through September 25th, 1789, by a 2/3 vote in the House and the Senate, they were then sent to the states. And what did they send? 12 amendments. 12 amendments. Ironically, the original First Amendment was not ratified. The original First Amendment called for creating congressional districts for each representative set at 40,000 people, 40,000 constituents. But it was never ratified because there was a fear of what happens if you have population growth. Because think about how big our House of Representatives would have to be today. What do we got, 320, 330 million people who are actually legal residents in our country? Divide that by 40,000. How many members of Congress is that? Quick, math people? Anyone a math person?
A lot,
yeah. How big would the building have to be?
Huge.
Yeah. Like the Coliseum or something like that? So luckily, the state said, no, that's stupid. They also said no to the original Second Amendment. The original Second Amendment called for Congress having the ability to set its own pay. But for the next Congress. So, Congress, as we're going to talk about, sits for 2-year terms. Every 2 years it's counted as a Congress. So if the current Congress that's in session wanted to make a raise, it would not be allowed to go into effect until the next Congress. So if you were not reelected, you wouldn't have the ability to vote for your own raise. Well, for whatever reason or not, it was never ratified. Until May 7th, 1992. Is it really? I was going to say, you're old. Weird story. And I got to keep it short because I know time is getting short. Back in like 1978, 79, there was a kid in college taking a history class, and the professor gave him a research paper. And the kid had no idea what to do. So he talked to the professor, and the professor said, kind of like what conversations I've had with some of you, what are you interested in? And he's like, I don't know, the kind of constitutional stuff. And he said, all right, well, why don't you go back and you look at, you know, how the Bill of Rights was proposed. And so the kid goes and starts doing research, and he stumbles upon the verbiage of the original Second Amendment. And he noticed, unlike all of the other amendments, there was no expiration date on that. So, for shits and giggles, he contacts his state rep, who then contacts the congressman, who then began sharing this idea. The kid went to Congress, he testified, and during the 1980s, state by state by state, began ratifying what would become the 27th Amendment. So, you never know what your papers that you write will result in. So, the original 1 and 2 scrapped. So our 1 to 10 today originally was 3 to 12. But the sequence is the same as it is today. First Amendment. The First Amendment protects you as an individual. It denies to Congress. And by the way, my 5 favorite words of legalese ever devised start off the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law. Love that. Congress shall make no law. Congress shall make no law that allows it to create a national church. And by the way, there is no such thing as separation of church and state. That's not a reality. That is an idea that originated in a letter that Jefferson wrote because the problem was is that Virginia was a member of the Anglican Church, the Church of England, which the English government controlled. So when he said there should be a separation of church and state, he was saying that the Virginia church should separate itself from England.
But there is separation of church.
No, there's not.
They're not separated?
No.
People cite that so often.
I know.
I don't know why every source I'm reading is telling me that it is separated.
There is no separation of church and state. The First Amendment says the federal government cannot make a national church of the United States. And it also cannot interfere with your free expression of religion. So you, even members of government, can be as religious as they want. And there's not a thing the government can do about it. Because the federal government cannot create a national church. And by the way, Zach, you know the thing that people always get confused on?
This?
No. The institution. Religion and churches are not the same.
Okay.
The church is the government structure, the bureaucracy, the hierarchy.
Okay.
Our government cannot make an institution of a church.
There cannot be the Church of the United
States. Yeah, they cannot literally be, like in England. You got to know English history.
Oh, okay.
When Henry VIII was king, he made himself the head of the Church of England.
Okay.
When they broke England away from Catholicism.
Okay.
The king literally had the ability to make the religious rules of church.
Okay.
And he used that as a tool to basically declare people as heretics. Well, the United States can't do that. So there can be churches on every corner in every town in the country. There's nothing the government can do about it.
What the government cannot do is it can't favor one religion over another. So, and again, the libertarian in me just kind of laughs, but every now and then you'll have those crazy Satanists that want to make satanic shrines just to kind of like shock people.
When you see displays put next to Christian crosses and stars of David, even if you may be offended about it, there's nothing the government can do about it.
They did that in like the Virginia State House.
They did. And citizens went and basically defaced the satanics.
I think it was a congressman, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, he ripped it down.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, technically, the State House couldn't put it back up.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Why? Well, the Founding Fathers recognized that your morality comes from your religion. And they didn't want the government brainwashing you. They didn't want the government telling you what to think, what to feel, what was in your morality, your ethics, right or wrong. That's up to your own conscience.
So once you figure out your morality, you then have the ability to engage in free speech. You can share your thoughts. And the government cannot stop you. Now, by the way, there's the lawyer in me. Your boss can. You can be fired for saying things at work. You can't turn around and say, free speech. But the government can't come and arrest you.
Is the First Amendment?
First Amendment. You got to look at it. There's a whole bunch of things in the First Amendment.
Free speech pertains to government, not the private sector.
Unless you tweet on like Twitter or something and say you're going to overthrow the government, they'll come and arrest you for that.
Right, but they're not going to arrest you for what you said. They're going to arrest you for trying to incite a revolution, which is illegal.
All right. Can't create a church. Can't stop you from being religious. Can't stop you from speaking your mind.
They also, First Amendment gives rise to the free press. You have a right to put your ideas into print and share them with your community.
They also cannot stop you from freely associating with anybody you want. So as I sometimes share with students, and it kind of makes them uncomfortable, but you got to listen to how I say it. If you want to be a Nazi, you have the right to be a Nazi. There's nothing the government can do about it. But I'll say this much, I'm not going to like you, because I don't like Nazis. But have at it. You have a right to freely associate with whoever you want.
Oh, also from the First Amendment? You have a right to peaceably assemble. Yes, you can go out and protest. But you know what you can't do? You can't riot and burn buildings to the ground. The First Amendment literally says peaceable assembly. And last but not least, you have a right to petition the government. You can send letters to the government and complain about things they're doing. True story. Back when Ted Kennedy was alive, I used to call his office and complain about the stuff that he was doing as my senator so much that two of the ladies that worked in his office knew me by my voice. You have a right to do that. Because would it make sense if you as a citizen didn't have the right to complain to the government about the things that the government's doing? Because is not the government, based on John Locke's ideas, supposed to be doing, acting by the consent of the governed? If you get violent and nasty and you use naughty language, and it's not that they're denying you from grieving, they're basically limiting you based on your own behavior. But they can't permanently ban you. You know another thing they can't do? If you post a comment on a congressman's or a senator's Twitter page or a Facebook page, they also can't delete those comments. So, just saying. All right. Crap, I'm running out of time. All right, I'm going to do this quick. You might have to do replay, but I'm assuming you know what most is there. Second Amendment, right to keep and bear arms. So what does that mean? Well, constitutionally speaking, if you want to go out and get an AR-15, you have the full legal right to do so. Third Amendment, that deals with the Quartering Act, like they imposed in Boston after the Tea Party. The government cannot put troops in your house, except during times of war with your consent. So, God forbid an invasion occurs and the soldiers are moving into Worcester. If you want to allow a soldier to sleep in your house, you can do that. But the government can't force you to. So look, you have a right to be who yourself, express your ideas. You have a right to defend yourself, even from the government. And the government cannot send soldiers into your house. Fourth Amendment. That protects the government from gathering evidence against you illegally. No illegal search and seizures. Because the Fourth Amendment requires what?
A warrant.
So, the warrant has to be signed off by a judge. It has to be based on probable cause. And it must say with reasonable certainty. We'll go that route. It has to say where they're looking and what they're looking for. Fifth Amendment. No self-incrimination. No taking of your property without due process of law. Sixth Amendment. Jury trial. Attorney. Speedy and public trials. Seventh Amendment, civil trials. If someone steals your phone, you do have the right to sue them and get money. Federal government can't say no to that. Eighth Amendment, no cruel and unusual punishment. No excessive bails. Ninth Amendment, the federal government is only allowed to do what is enumerated in the Constitution. If it's not in the Constitution, the federal government can't do it. And lastly, the 10th Amendment. Anything else, unless it's mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, is left to the states or the people thereof. Now, know the Bill of Rights. Make sure you study it. Make sure you know what's in it. I'm helping you. Know the Bill of Rights. Know the Fifth Amendment. The Article 5 process. Understand the different powers. And if you get all that down, you'll be okay on the test. Which, by the way, what day do you want it? Would you like to have your test tomorrow? Would you like to have your test on Friday? Would you like to have your test on Saturday? Then that leaves the last possible day. That means your test will be on Sunday. So what will happen is the exam will open up in Blackboard at 8 a.m. and you have all day and night to take care of it. It will close at 11:59 p.m. If you have to work, send me an email and I can put in an exception. I can program it in. But don't use and abuse me. All right? It's going to be mostly multiple choice. There will be a matching section, and there'll be two essays, one of which will count as extra credit. I don't know yet. Probably 30-ish. Most of them are multiple choice.
When is this?
Sunday.
Sunday.
It will be timed. So I'm going to limit it to the class period, so you get an hour and 15 minutes. And lastly, it's going to be randomized. One question at a time, no backsies. So don't skip anything, because you're not going to go back. All right?
Yes,
if you have any questions, just let me know.
Good afternoon.
You as well.
He was at Trump's NSA after Michael Flynn for a while.
Oh, someone. The name sounds familiar.
I'm just wondering, because my dad met him last week at the MLM summit, the Military Additive Manufacturing Summit.
Oh, yeah.
He signed the book for me,
nice.
But I wasn't super familiar with who he was. But, you know, my dad explained to him what I was doing and stuff, and he wrote to Roman, with confidence that you will serve our nation with distinction.
Hoorah.
It was so super cool.
That's awesome.
But now I'm trying to figure out more about it. The book is My Tour of Duty in the Trump White House.
Huh.
But he's written a couple of them.
Right.
So.
Right.
But on the Fourth Amendment, that doesn't go for people that have, off probation or, off parole.
No, because those people have already gone through the judicial process. So to be on probation or to receive parole, that meant they caught you doing something and they approved it in court. And the court has sentenced you. So if you are on parole, for example, you have to report to your parole officer. And of course, if you breach the terms of the parole, you go to jail.
That's what I thought. Because you're already confined, but you're confined in a different space. So if they didn't do a search of your house, they don't need a warrant for that.
Well, if I didn't get as wordy, I would have talked you through it a little more. So this is you being you. Yep, take care. This is you defending yourself. This is you having a safe home. This prevents the government from entrapping you.
Yeah.
Because once you are entrapped, then they're going to start the due process to put you on trial. So Fifth Amendment, you can't basically be tricked into saying, I did it, a forced confession. You know, the government can't take your stuff, that kind of stuff. Oh, double jeopardy. The government
can't
put you on trial, fail, and do it again. Yeah, exactly. Then during the trial, you have protections. Of course, that's civil. And then once you go through the trial, the government cannot do what my favorite Assyrian emperor of all times did, a guy by the name of Tiglath-Pileser. What he used to do, two things he used to do that I love. One was, if he was laying siege to your city and you were the leader and you refused to let him in, he would take you, once he got in there, up to the top of your walls. He would take his sword, cut open your stomach, grab your intestine, wrap it around the edifice and throw you off. And so as you fall, you see your stomachs. The government can't do that. Because that would be cruel and unusual. Yeah. So what is not cruel and unusual? Anything that's passed through law. So the government can hang you. The government can kill you by firing squad, lethal injection. Those are all legal prescribed manners. And then the government can only do what it's supposed to do. Everything else goes to the states. It all works together.
Bring back capital punishment.
Oh, I'm a favor of that. Yeah. You know what I would love to see? The guillotine.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Post it all over town.
Yeah. Yeah, bring it right on town common. You know, bring out the kids, have some popcorn vendors.
Oh. In Africa, if someone is like accused or has like raped a child, they take like the man's penis and chop it off.
Well, you also know what happens to people who are child abusers once they get into prison, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
My dad is, well, used to be a frequent in and out, and we had all the stories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, prison is not a place you want to go.
No. Yeah. I wouldn't want to survive.
No, no. Yeah, I'm all set with that, too.
Have a good one.
Take care.
So, for the project, like the end of the semester project.
Yeah, paper.
The topic I submitted, you said it was like a little broad.
Yeah.
Do you want me to like resubmit what I narrow in?
No, I mean you political parties?
Yeah.
Okay. A couple of people said political parties. I just don't know who said what. So yeah. So basically what you said is I interpreted it is that you wanted to kind of talk about political parties from like the beginning all the way to today.
Yeah.
You know, that you're just not gonna be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It's way too much. Mm-hmm. I don't even think you could cover that in a single edition book. You know, you might have to have multi-volumes. So what I want you to do, I think you'll have an easier time, focus on a particular time period or an event and deal with just that.
Okay.
Because there's been so much written on every single election that we've had in this country that you've got to be able to find something that's right. Interesting.
Okay.
And so if I remember correctly, I think I gave everyone who said political parties just like some examples. Right. That came off the top of my head.
I think like the Whigs, you think that'd be a good one?
Yeah, all right, absolutely.
Perfect. All right.
Yeah, so like the Whigs, you can basically focus on, you know, what was their agenda, where did they come from, and what happened to them.
Okay, perfect. All right. You have a good one. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you as well. Have a nice weekend. Good luck on your test.
Thank you. I feel prepared.
It should not be that hard.
Yeah, I don't.
Everybody seems to be kind of plugged in and engaged, so I'm not worried. You too.